Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
Big announcement to start this week of Chops TV, but before we get to that, Jen, how are you today?
I'm okay, I think.
Okay.
No, I'm bad. I forgot. I almost got in a car accident this morning.
But you didn't.
Okay, I'm good. You're right.
I actually almost got in a car accident yesterday. It wasn't too bad, but I had to kind of like slow down and pull a little bit into the shoulder. The car in front
What's
of me abruptly
with people?
Stopped. Well, it was... So it was right at the merger of 670 and 70, right? And you know those lanes come together. And yeah. There were two cops coming down the 71.
Mm.
And I'm on the 671,
Bad
so
boys.
On the left side. And they were running their sirens. And at a certain point, it really appeared like some people thought that you're supposed to pull over on the highway for cops with their sirens.
Oh,
and literally, It went to zero for a split second. Even though the cars were in front of us. I was like, what are you guys doing?
That's crazy.
You can't do that. You cannot stop on the highway.
No.
I don't care if the president's motorcade is coming down the way. You cannot go to zero on the highway.
Not full brake.
No, it was legitimately very dangerous. But whatever, I made it through. So, yeah.
Okay, both good days then.
Yeah, you live to tell the tale. Not that big a deal.
A day where I make it out alive. Off of 315, that 315 670 merger, yeah, I'll take it.
Bigger news, though, a Chops TV announcement. If you were listening to Bishop and Friends earlier this week or following the fan on Twitter, you may already know, but for people who are just fans of the podcast, J-Lo and I, we are actually going to be recording our first live podcast.
Gasp.
Oh, yes. This will be at the Grandview Theater and Draft House. It's right there on Grandview Avenue in downtown Grandview, Saturday, May 11th. At 1:30 p.m., we will be there, and you can come join us for a showing of The Fall Guy, the new Emily Blunt, Ryan Gosling movie, which is on our list of let's check it out while we're searching for the next great rom-com. But if you want a chance to go to the show for free and check out the podcast for free, we are giving away tickets on Bishop and Friends. There will be one on the fan social media as well, but we're also giving away one pair here. So that is Saturday, May 11th. That is the week of Mother's Day for people who have to go out of town for that. You might not be able to make it, but anybody else, Saturday, May 11th at 1:30 at the Grandview Theater and Draft House, and we are going to pick a winner by asking you to tweet in at @ChopsTV. Again, tweet in at @ChopsTV. Give us a follow if you don't already follow us, by the way. Your favorite, or not favorite, in your opinion, the best Emily Blunt performance in any of her movies that she has been in, and if it is the one that I'm thinking of, you will win. And if nobody picks that one, I'll just have to pick my favorite or maybe let J-Lo pick her favorite as well.
Thanks. If your sweet mama loves Ryan Gosling as much as I love Ryan Gosling, then we can talk about him on Saturday before Mother's Day.
Actually, if you win the tickets and you don't have anything to give your mother for Mother's Day, give her the tickets. Bring her to it. I'm sure she loves Chops TV.
Yes, the gift of free things.
Nothing says I think and care about you a lot like here are two tickets that I won from a podcast that I listen to and nobody else does. Ever heard of it? Happy Mother's Day. I'm excited about it, though. So that should be a good time. And hopefully we get a little bit closer to the next great rom-com. More on that in a little bit. First off, we're going to start with Fallout. It's been out for a couple of weeks now. It took us a couple of weeks to get through it. I labeled it as Fallout Season 1, and like, yeah, that is what it is, but when they adapt video games, there is that weird bridge that they have to cross where, like, yes, we have to take and we have to pay off on what the video game is actually about, what the story is, what people like about the video game, but we also have to take a kernel of story that's supposed to be interactive and make it work as a narrative sense, and I think that's where at parts. I didn't dislike the show, but I would say I'll start on a slightly critical note that it did lose me at certain times, or there were moments where it's like, that feels like a video game reference. I didn't play the Fallout games, so I didn't get it. I knew the the nuke boy with the thumb. I knew the cola. That's like a big thing. It's like your health in there or a way to one of the ways to get your health up. But there were just certain instances where I'm like, is that a reference to something? Remember when they replaced the doctor guy's leg?
Yeah.
And they went, there was two old ladies running that shop. And she asked the other old lady, and she's like, not now, I'm eating my, I can't even remember what the food was. But the way she said it, I was like, okay, is that like a funny memed line? So if you play Fallout, let me know if that is. But there were moments like that throughout the season where I was just like, that feels like a direct pull from the video game. And it doesn't do anything for me. No. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I think this is one of those shows that, at least for me, is going to be the critics probably aren't going to view it as favorably as the like diehard video game fans. Now, there are some video game adaptations that I don't think you need to be like solely invested in to like get the concept of the show or the movie. And I don't think this one falls into that category either.
It's not its own thing. It's definitely a companion to the video game.
Yeah. And it did not do it for me. I love an immersive world. I love a totally like dystopian landscape too. So I was really surprised when I did not like this. I don't know if any of like the main three characters that we're supposed to be following, and I assume that you play in the game as in the game.
From what I can tell in the game, you play as a vault dweller and you meet all of these other characters.
Okay, I don't care.
Game's been around since 1997, which I did not know that the first Fallout came out in 1997. Yeah. I did some research on the game because I asked you to do it and I knew you wouldn't.
I didn't.
So I decided to do it.
Well, you know, just like this is my biggest problem with the whole show. I think, gun to my head, I could not tell you what the last scene of the last episode was.
They got the chip to the lady from And Just Like That, and then she plugged it in and
it was able to
generate power, and so now everybody out in the wasteland of this world that has suffered from 150 years post nuclear annihilation now has power available to them, and Vol-Tec was always trying to protect it, and it turns out that her dad, McLaughlin,
was kind of in on the whole thing
and was a part of the conspiracy all the way back to the beginning. Here's something that maybe we missed a title card or something, but I think it answers a question you had. You were wondering, and this I found from my research into the games, you were wondering, why is some of the tech better than what we have, but also, like, everything else, like, you know, the entertainment and the cars and stuff all looks like 1950s. It's in an alternate universe post-World War II from our world, and actually, at least in the video game, so they're at least carrying some of this over. Again, I don't remember if they explicitly said the year at any given point when they were going back to the before times. It's 2077.
Oh, okay.
That's when the big war happens.
The big war.
Where they drop all the bombs, Jen.
Yeah.
What? What do you mean? You don't know what I'm referencing when we just watched a whole season of Fallout and I called something the big war?
Well, here's again my problem with it. I don't know if I was ever like really truly invested because I confuse a lot of the war stuff with the Sandy, the Shady Oaks, California, New California place.
Okay.
Whatever that fucking town was called. Summer Shandy.
I don't remember what it was called.
But anyway, I confuse that and then like the actual first nuclear event. And those are two different things, right? Like the New California thing is totally
The New California
different.
Was an additional strike onto it. And then we just...
Because they were gaining too much progress, right? Above ground.
Yeah, and the show definitely alludes to and shows a little bit of like they wanted to run experiments on the people underground. But that's still,
right. And that's
still kind of a mystery being uncovered.
Yeah, and that's all still Vault, right? So even the New California bombings were Vault.
Yes, that's I believe what we're supposed to believe. As you can tell, this wasn't our favorite show, and we were definitely guilty of films or phone scrolling during it.
Absolutely, and I feel bad because I think that in order to judge something fairly, you have to at least give a majority of your attention to it. I was out on this show from like episode 2, and I genuinely cannot tell you why, because it had all the ingredients that I liked. but it's not the sum of its parts.
It's, I guess, I mean, maybe this follows with the video game. It was a lot more violent, like, graphically than I thought. It's not meant to be, like, the most serious forms of violence, but there's a lot of blood and guts and gore.
Oh, yeah.
In the show. And headshots really. And things like that. Not that I'm not saying it bothered me, but it stands out. It's a choice. It means something. You can't just put that, like, that didn't do anything for you. No. You see that kind of stuff, and it doesn't, like, stand out as, like.
Not that, honestly. The only part was with the foot. It was, like, super gruesome when he took off his sock, and it was like, ugh, his big toe was dangling. That's really gross. And obviously, like, the stuff with the dog. But the head, the human head stuff, I don't know.
No, it didn't gross me out, but I was just surprised at how much hyper-violence there was in it. That wasn't what I was expecting, but again, I don't know what the graphic nature of the video game is like.
Yeah, that's fair.
If you could be any of the people in it, would you rather be a part of the Brotherhood, a ghoul, a vault dweller, just one of those random surface people, or, trick question, one of the nuclear monsters?
Oh, I was going to say I would probably be a vault dweller, but one of the nuclear ones. They seem like they live in a really...
I meant like the non-human ones.
Yeah, no. I want to be a cyclops in the vault dweller community of like... a bunch of weird little freak boys.
And they hold their little cult sessions in the center.
Sure. Are they in a cult? Yeah. Are they happy? Yeah. This is a miserable existence for mostly everyone else. Everyone seems fairly civil compared to everybody else in the show. So, yeah, I'll hang out with a...
Well, that's a fair point, too, about like the idea of like, are they in a cult? Yeah, they are. Every group is kind of every culty group in this show.
Yeah, for sure. Being a ghoul requires too much work. Like, if you're on your last leg and you have to get more of that...
whatever that medicine is.
Yeah, that seems like a lot of work and dangerous existence. Also, I mean, when we had a conversation the other day, like, if you had to get plastic surgery, what would you do? And I was like, I don't know, I'd probably, like, you know, fix my nose up a little bit. Just make it, like, a cute little button nose, like Cindy Lou or, you know, whatever. But, even though I'm not, like, the biggest fan of my nose, I don't want to not live without it.
So you don't want to be a ghoul.
So I can't be a ghoul. So I guess I would have to be the Vault Tech dad, because things were pretty good for him until he got kidnapped.
That's true.
Right?
But how Walton Goggins seems like he's having the most fun as the ghoul.
You think so?
Mm.
No, he's not having fun. I mean, he is so apathetic. He gets to have
the most adventure.
Yes, he does. No, Lucy probably has the most adventure. He's been doing that for like 200 years, except for the bits where he was locked in the...
You think that now that we have the whole power thing and that the ghoul and Lucy are teaming up and they're going to go after the dad and try to find him back to the people who are in charge of Vault-Tec, do you think now that it's a little bit more established when season 2 drops... that you will be ready to dive back into the world of Fallout? Or is this you're writing it off now?
I don't know. Maybe. I think it depends on what they end up doing with the people still in the vaults, like Vault 31, 32, and 33.
I need it to be a little clearer, and because it's not like ambiguous enough where I think that like all of the sides have a fair point and I can understand their reasoning. It was a little confusing throughout all the factions. And again, this felt a little bit more like something that if you knew the video game, maybe you would get it a little bit. But just the things they were saying, the rhetoric of leadership at various places, not just the Vault Dwellers, not just the ghouls, not just the mutants who had come back and taken the vault that we were talking about. I don't know which side was supposed to be the good guy and the bad guy consistently throughout it. It was like he's saying it in a way that the performance to me says I'm a bad guy.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is, this was the perfect example. When they were running that new election down in the vault that Lucy left. And yeah, things are nefarious and you think something sketchy's going on. And so that's why her brother is trying to investigate it and trying to figure it out. But at the same time, the people that, now they're the bumbling idiots of it. So as you get more information, maybe. But it was just really hard for me to reconcile that they're like, no, we should keep the people who came in here as prisoners and we should try to rehabilitate them and bring them back into the society and not just kill them with impunity. And I was like, they're framing it like those guys are wrong, but they sound right to me.
Oh, the Raiders?
No, the people talking about the Raiders.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, that I see what you're saying. The story is framing their opinions as the incorrect choice. They should kill the people who were coming down. Almost like making fun of those people for being so altruistic.
Yeah.
And they're like... endeavor to rehabilitate these
is
criminals.
That a comment on the apocalyptic world, or is that supposed to be a gray area and you're supposed to understand the motivations of the other characters but maybe not the it is one of those situations where those guys are right for the wrong reasons and he's wrong for the right reasons.
Who's he?
He would be the brother.
I see. Yeah.
You do not like the show. Okay. Okay. You can't discuss this. I'm sorry. We're moving on. You do not like the show. I like should have just taken you at your word.
Rico from Hannah, Montana. Yes. I can try. What else? Ask me a different question.
I'm not interviewing you about Fallout, a show you don't like. What would be the point in that? Last thing I'll say is I do think the Walton Goggins Before Time story and the mystery of that unraveling, that was the most engrossing part of it for me. So whenever those scenes came back up, because I also felt like I was following the mystery along. You didn't get anything as far as like where these breadcrumbs were really going, at least for me, until that final episode. And then they're like, here's the explanation for all of it. And it's like, couldn't some of that been sprinkled in throughout so I didn't feel as lost with the characters?
Yeah, I feel like if we had gotten that resolution of like, we find out in the past when he finds out like his wife is ingrained in this whole society and what their true intentions are, if that had happened on like episode 4 or 5, then we could spend the rest of the show like getting to the end. I would have liked that much more because I was more invested in the past than I was in the current timeline, which is part of the problem. I was invested in Rico's storyline in the vault because he's also investigating what happened, the mystery of the past with Vault Tech.
And that one was unraveling at least a little bit in front of our eyes. Yeah.
So that one I liked more. The Walter Goggins parts I enjoyed more. So yeah, that's what I enjoyed from the show. And it wasn't enough to like hook me completely.
Do you think some of those breadcrumbs being laid, like if what we learned at the end of episode 8 was some of that at the very least, we learned at the end of episode 4? Do you think that would have helped you along a little bit?
Yeah, that's what I mean. So that I can stop wanting to be in the past in every episode. I'm always looking forward to when we go back to uncover what's going on with him.
Yeah, it's like, maybe that's the problem with trying to pay off too much of the video game, is they really did want to show the Fallout world and the monsters and everything, but those didn't really seem to advance the story. And even the little chip in the guy's head and the head itself is just a MacGuffin. We have no idea what it's for. We have no idea why people are after it until we get to the end of the season. So, my official recommendation is if you play the video games, I think you would like it. But if you don't, I don't think you're going to be entertained the whole time through is the problem.
Yeah, and then I think also too, I was looking forward to being... I think in that first episode, it felt like it was going to be a Western, like the way we're introduced to the ghoul and even the whole look of the ghoul. And, you know, it's like a desolate landscape. But it didn't give off, you know, Western vibes either. Like spaghetti Western.
Does
it? A little bit, like more the further that we get into it.
I think the Walton Goggins character is really the thing. No, I'm not going to confuse just because it's a like desert place, you know, a desert climate, that it's a Western, but I think the Walton Goggins has enough of a like lone gunman traveling around that it does have a little bit of that. But no, you're right, it's not like watching True Grit. Remember they remade that 10 years ago or something? No, it's not quite that, and it's probably about as Western as The Mandalorian, which has the right vibes and hits the right things, but unless you're a huge fan of the Westerns, I'm not sure it like means that liking those shows means you like Westerns. Mm. I don't think it works in reverse that way. All right. Well, you tell people to not watch it now.
Sorry. I guess.
You don't have to be sorry. You don't have to like everything.
Watch it. Did play the video game instead. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to get heat for this one.
I just did not realize how much you really were not into it.
I told you from episode two. After episode one.
You say that with every show we start.
That's not true. That's not true. I usually get to like episode six or seven where I'm like, nah. This one, I immediately knew that the vibes were not the vibes for me, and that's okay.
Were the vibes of How to Date Billy Walsh for you? Because you made me watch this one, so I'm going to let you take the lead and explain How to Date Billy Walsh. I will add one thing while you prepare to take the lead there. I'm pretty sure this was an AI article because it got this movie, How to Date Billy Walsh, and the new Mean Girls musical movie mixed up. Because I was like, is How to Date Billy Walsh based off of something? And it goes, yes, How to Date Billy Walsh is based on Alice Oseman's graphic novels. The movie is also inspired by a stage adaptation. Filming took place in York and Cheshire, England between August and September 2022. But then it also like started talking about Mean Girls, and it was like, and the success of the stage adaptation allowed Tina Fey to turn it into a movie. And I was like, well, this is obviously talking about Mean Girls. And then it starts talking about the cast of Mean Girls. So I can't conclusively figure out if How to Date Billy Walsh is based on anything or if these two guys, Alexander J. Farrell and Greer Ellison, just came up with this on their own. Normally, that would be something I would say is impressive, but I would be more impressed by you saying, this isn't good, I'm never going to make this, and shelving this project, than it getting to where it got to, where I was watching it on Amazon Prime on Sunday evening.
Oh, geez. Okay.
It's the worst movie I've seen in a long time.
Really?
By a long shot. It's terrible. It doesn't make any sense. The action doesn't look good, like the actual character actions. Billy Walsh wears the same outfit the entire movie.
Okay. Why don't you take a deep breath? I feel like you're still a little peeved that I didn't like it as much as you think that I didn't like it or whatever the fuck that you said.
Maybe. I'm fired up today.
Clearly. So, How to Date Billy Walsh. The synopsis is, a schoolboy named Archie, whose feelings for a childhood friend are put to the test when an American student named Billy Walsh comes into their lives. So, the main girlie is from Bridgerton. She was season two of Bridgerton. She plays the younger sister to Kate Sharma. She becomes the diamond of the season. So here's the thing about me.
I didn't realize that either. Is that why you keyed in on this?
Yeah, here's the thing about me. One, I like a rom-com and you like a rom-com and it looked like a rom-com. So I said we should probably watch the rom-com. First and foremost. So
I'm not mad at you.
Before you start attacking me, saying... Okay.
It's okay to watch a bad movie sometimes, but I did want it to be clear that I thought this was a very bad movie.
You sure did.
Did you like it?
No mistaking that.
Did you think it was good?
No, I didn't think it was good.
It's worse than any of those teen rom-coms that we've enjoyed, you know, at varying levels, but like The Kissing Booth we think is hilarious and fun.
Yeah.
P.S. To All the Boys I Ever Loved Before, those ones with the Norma Jean and all the letters.
I think I had the most problem with the narrative. What's the word that I'm looking for? The breaking the fourth wall part of it.
There was all that narration. That's why I was like, is this based on like a Wattpad or a novel or something?
It felt that way.
It feels like it was already written.
Yeah. Okay. So then my second point is that the Bridgerton fandom, as far as I'm aware, does not have like a concrete name. I think we're going with like members of the Ton. So as a member of the Ton, I will be keyed in to anything that these people are watching, right? So, or in. Like, any of these actors, I'm going to be glued to it. So then, that rule also applied to this person. So that's why I picked the movie. Did I anticipate it being awful? Yes, I did. I did.
Remember when he fell off the treehouse and we had to rewind? Because it's like, how did he... He's standing there on like a rope bridge of a treehouse. He's just standing there straight up. And she goes, oh, she's like surprised he's there. Of course she is. He's surprising her. Why would it surprise him when then she's surprised? Then all of a sudden, he's horizontal above the railing of it. We did not see him jump. We didn't see anything. That's just where they cut to. And he's falling out of the treehouse. And she also, remember when she fell off her bike? Similar thing. The movement of the body during the fall physically doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, the editing was really bad in this movie, too. It was just not a great movie. And that's okay. didn't realize that there was going to be such vitriol.
These two writers, ever heard of Butterfly Kisses or Love is Thicker Than Water, Making a Killing, or Star? It's all caps on that one. I've never heard of any of these. There's a chance, at least Greer Ellison I was reading is Irish. So, like, there's a chance some of these are just from across the pond and I don't know them. But it doesn't mean I'm going to check out any of the two movies that these guys
Why
wrote.
Why does Billy get to wear his leather jacket the whole time and everyone else has to be in uniform?
That doesn't make any sense. It makes sense that he's wearing it on the first day. Like, he just shows up. But then, yeah, he's allowed to wear it. And also, everybody's fawning over him. And it's like, yeah, leather jackets are cool, but he's clearly wearing the same thing.
Yeah.
Every single day. It's a white t-shirt and a leather jacket. The only time he changes, maybe on one of their dates. I don't think so. But at the dance, at the June ball, he wears a black shirt and the same leather jacket. Yeah.
I mean, I guess. Ooh, I had a thought. And then it just literally vanished from my brain.
Well, how about this thought that we do like the kissing booth, and there were a lot of similarities between this one. The two main characters that are best friends, born on the same day, the girl's mom is passed away, the boy's parents are sort of inexplicably, like, ridiculously wealthy, but instead of it being her brother, it's the new cool guy at school. And actually, that's something I like about the kissing booth, is that it didn't actually end up being, oh, the friends should be together, because I don't think she should be with him after what he did doing the fake old person AI so that he could have video chats with her as some sort of love doctor to help but also sort of slowly sabotage her relationship or the beginnings of the relationship with Billy Walsh. And then she finds out about it and all he has to do is give some sappy speech at the dance. No, that's like fraud.
Yeah. And you sort of hit on exactly what I was trying to remember. Friends to lovers is like my least favorite romance trope. I don't like it. I think that women and men and men and men and women and women, you know, the girls, gays, straights, they can all be friends with each other. You can be friendly with members of the sex that you're attracted to. But you cannot be friends with them for 16 plus years and then have it realized when you're 18. It is just annoying to me. I don't like it.
I think it's stupid. I completely do not believe in real life that you would ever be able to do the When Harry Met Sally, or he does this speech at the dance and say, I love the way you laugh. I love the way that your arm crinkles up when you grab something. It's always the most random bullshit that, like, doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
No, if you say that to a real girl, even if she's your friend, she's going to think you're weird. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
I do not advise ever writing down something that is explaining all the little quirks that you love about somebody. That's not how it works. That's not how attraction works. That's not how the beginning of a relationship works. It's not how love works.
Also, the use of the PA system in the school itself. There is no way that an administrator would let this girl hijack the PA system for like a 5-minute soliloquy about how she's like kind of a gross nerd.
Apparently it's super far away from everything in the school because both the friend, the boy, and the principal both hear it pretty early on. Like, oh, she shouldn't be doing this. One for disciplinary reasons. One for he's embarrassed for his friend even though he told her
to do this.
Which I don't even get the reasoning. So she insulted him on their date, Billy Walsh, and then he was like, my mom also died. And then she has to tell embarrassing stories about herself because Billy Walsh is insecure that nobody ever actually likes him for real.
Oh no, poor Billy.
It doesn't make any sense, and it shouldn't, but then it works.
Yeah, it doesn't. Whatever. I don't know. Yeah, what you're talking about though is like long-term manipulation. I think. I'm not sure how long the movie, like the time span that this takes place over, but it's too goddamn long for someone who you consider to be a friend your entire life.
Because when they first get back and they see the sign for the June ball, they go 6 weeks left in this term.
I just don't understand like why you would want to be romantically involved with someone who is not a good friend to you.
And why that would... Yeah, like at that point, like she knows that he is into him and that they that he loves her. And yeah. she reciprocates and explains that, yes, she feels it too. And then goes through that. And yeah, I don't think that the speech yeah. is enough. He's also getting bullied during it. Maybe that helps him out. Because there's like the subplot of like the all the jocks are mean to him. Yeah. And on the day of the dance, they... Oh, that just reminded me of something. Of course I forgot it because it's not important to the movie. Remember how much... I'll finish the jock thing. The jocks kidnap him and tie him up on the soccer field or whatever.
Classic and jock, his yeah.
Cool. There is like a choreographed dance, but there are also other moments where they just do something for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's obviously it's just filler because the movie's only an hour and 40 minutes long. They needed to get it to feature length, but you could probably have cut one of them. There are a few instances where the bigger one too. Remember when she's getting ready for the date and they do a outfit montage, but it's like 10 different cuts of three different outfits.
The same three outfits.
That's not. They clearly did not have a very large clothing budget. So yeah. we'll put the kids in uniforms, and Billy can wear the same thing the entire mm-hmm. movie. Billy has to smell. He drives a motorcycle and wears the same clothes every day. There's no way Billy doesn't smell.
I guess that's.
I don't know. It's England. Do they not care? American musk.
American musk. Yeah, it smells like beef jerky and grease.
I shouldn't have showered when we were over there. I would have been the belle of the ball.
The belle of the ball. Two things. First thing, I think the only movie that could like really successfully get away with it, and it was because of Usher's involvement, is
that is in She's All That.
She's Bone All That.
Show, brother. Check it
that
out
is like now. The only time that we're really like taken out of that movie by like a mass choreographed dance scene, and it like fits in the film because it's awesome.
You know what's funny about that? Remember He's All That?
Yeah.
That was this guy.
What? Okay.
What's his name? Tanner Buchanan. Yeah.
He's becoming like the little, almost like,
like a heartthrob.
Yes, but like very like specific. It's like the Noah Centineo where they like find the one kid and then he's in like five different teen dramas.
Yeah.
Because he's like the hot little guy.
And but, he's like, still young enough to pull off high school for a few more years.
But. I mean, he's definitely attractive, but he's just like a short king.
I would agree with you on the sense that like he's not quite the like heartthrob that shows up as the new kid and yes. every girl loves him.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I like him in Cobra Kai though.
I like Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai is good.
I'd rather watch Cobra Kai than probably even another season of Fallout, but definitely more than How to Date Billy Walsh, which may or may not be based on a graphic novel by this Alice woman.
I don't know.
On the article and it said, this is no longer available. And I was like, what is going on? So then I looked, how to date
Billy. Are they trying to like scrub the internet of this movie like that Beyonce picture from the Super Bowl?
I was trying to do the opposite. I was trying to find any evidence that this came from something other than a movie because it's just, I don't believe that anybody just sat down and wrote this screenplay out of the thin blue air. But I typed in like, graphic novel of How to Date Billy Walsh, and all the images were just the like poster images mm-hmm. of the new movie on Prime. If anybody knows if How to Date Billy Walsh is adapted from anything that previously existed, graphic novel or otherwise, please let me know.
Yeah, okay, so here's the second thing. There's a scene in the movie where he can't stand up to his bullies in a real effective way, but he certainly stands up to her bullies when he like dumps the thing or he like throws the whatever pie confectionery sugar dessert in her face and then he pours the milkshake on top of his head after mm-hmm. she gets the bully pours the milkshake on top of the girl's
yeah,
head.
Yeah, he has like his own personal food fight.
Yeah, so and everyone's like, yeah, do it. And it's like, if you had just done that a month ago, we would be in a totally different situation here. So if anyone is like wanting to ask their friends out or is like secretly in love with their best friend, like you need to tell them because you're doing a disservice to one, them, because they probably have some unrequited love for you also. And two, just shoot your shot, because if you don't, then you're going to have to wait until her and Billy inevitably fall out because he's from America and doesn't have a visa. He won't be a problem in 6 months when you go to uni.
What's worse? Him wanting to sabotage her chances with Billy Walsh, Or in order to do that, pretending to be an 80-year-old man who's a love doctor.
It's just insane.
Oh, it's the plot of How to Date Billy Walsh doesn't make any sense?
It's just nuts. What? I don't know how realistically someone would get from A to B. And I'm not, and it's not because he's a teenager. This kid does not have a ton of critical thinking skills. If he had thought about it critically for 2 minutes.
You'd think he'd be able to think because he lives in the Batcave. Which is not inexplicable because he's super wealthy, but he's got this crazy room with all sorts of stuff in it, and it's really moody lit, and they like even film him. You even mentioned it at one point. You're like, what's up with this Bruce Wayne stuff? And I was like, I don't know. What's up with Nick Frost being the driver and barely being in the movie?
Why is he barely in the movie? That is a great point.
He's arguably the most famous person in the movie.
Why is he not in the movie more? That doesn't even make sense.
They never even fully explain the whole driver and him being rich.
Does he need a paycheck?
Nick Frost?
Yeah.
Was he an executive producer on this and was like, I'll do it? I don't know. I guess we could look into that.
Did an actor drop out?
But I can't believe anything that I look up on the internet about this movie.
Maybe it will become a cult classic.
I don't think so. And I just slotted it into last place on our search for the next great rom-com list. Yeah, behind Robots, behind Choose Love, behind Players, behind Irish Wish.
Behind Choose Love. Wow.
Choose Love was at least entertaining. Like, I couldn't even, the way that we show people the kissing booth that we've talked about, I couldn't even pull this movie off that way. I like, if somebody asked me, should I watch this? Or, like, somebody was over and they're like, oh, let's watch something silly. I wouldn't even want to put them through.
Maybe this is just a difference. And I'm not going to say this as, like, a blanket statement for all girls. But the girlies who like the cheesy rom-coms or, like, read or, you know, were, like, into fan fiction, that kind of
like
shit.
Smut.
No, not like smut, just like cheesy, unreal, unbelievably unrealistic romantic stories. I think could still watch this and like get some sort of kick out of it. Like, I definitely enjoyed watching this more than Robots. I'm not saying it's a better movie. I'm just saying like...
I did not quite get to So Bad It's Good. It's baffling.
I don't even think it's So Bad It's Good, but it's inexplicable, but it does like scratch an itch sometimes when you just need like...
I think what you're getting at from my standpoint, and I can agree with it slightly, is it is fun to watch, almost cathartic, to watch a movie this bad and like almost stretch a muscle for you that like, I still can... tell when a movie is like objectively not good. And there's a little bit to that, but it's not, I'm not gonna watch it again.
Sure. Yeah, that's not what I was saying at all, but I agree with that sentiment as well.
Well, I was trying to relate it back to me of why like,
oh, you trying to relate it back to you so we can talk about you. Shocker. Shocking.
I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's not called J-Lo TV.
That's, again, damn it, that's fair. He's got points.
We are contentious today. We're going back and forth. We have different opinions on these things.
I think I'm like preemptively hungry because you just said, let's eat salads only today.
And we got all that salad left over. We can just let it go bad.
And then you're like, I'll finish my burger. I'm like, okay, well, what am I supposed to have with my salad? And you're like, you could have this frozen piece of chicken from 8 months ago.
You asked if there was any chicken and I found some frozen chicken. I said, it looks like chicken. I think it's from Christmas.
I literally said at my desk at work, Jesus Christ. And I had to text Jesus Christ to you. You're like, wait, what? Is that what? I get to eat the Applebee's burger from yesterday and that's like not the same?
It certainly sounds like it put you in a big mood, which brings us to our next and second Bridgerton alum TV show or movie. This one's a TV show. It was originally on Channel 4 over in British land. So it is not, it is a American distribution Tubi original, but not a full-on Tubi original, which is something we were wondering while watching it, but pretty sure that like there's no way that Tubi just made this like British dramedy, I guess.
I would call it a dramedy.
This is way better than How to Date Billy Walsh. I immediately got the vibes of Broad City, but a little bit older. Instead of in their 20s, they're more like in their early 30s. And that you really get that sense in the first episode. And it still has that vibe. But I didn't realize going in, because you just kind of turned it on. I was like, hey, I wanted to watch a show. And I was like, I'll give it a shot. Why not? I did not know it was going to be so deep and about mental health. And the girl is bipolar and possibly has other ailments. And
yeah.
then that.
Let me read the synopsis.
Okay.
Then you could get into your thoughts, yeah?
Read me the synopsis.
Just for some context for the people. I think, so I'm trying to do this lately. Sometimes we don't give you enough context, right? You might not know what the hell we're talking about. So here's some context.
All right, so you're context girl now.
A series of chaotic events put Maggie and Eddie's decade-long friendship to the test, with Maddie's bipolar disorder making an unwelcome return. Eddie begins to question whether this friendship is really in their best interest. Now, Nicola Coughlin plays Maggie, and Lydia West plays Eddie, the friend and owner of a bar inherited by her deceased father of some years.
Yes, and a half owner. She owns it the other half with her brother.
With her brother.
Because that's a huge plot of him trying to sell the bar throughout this season. You put the note in here that it did feel not like short in the sense that they didn't tie up the stories they were trying to do per se, but like it did feel like a show that could have probably used a few more like escapade type stuff, because there a little bit of it does feel somewhat like that episodic nature. Mm-hmm. And as I watched it, I was like, you know what? I kind of miss a few more episodic televisions being a part of my routine. Because right now it's Abbott Elementary is kind of the only one. And it's, I'm not going to break in and watch a bunch of network television. But it is nice to have more self-contained episodes that I don't feel like every episode's a cliffhanger and every episode is building on the last one. This one certainly builds its story throughout it, but each episode has its own coherent storyline.
Yeah, it has its driving, escalating conflict within the episode.
Yeah, and it's wrapped up by the end of the episode.
Yeah, and it all compounds until that final episode. That's what I would say would be my only critique, is that I wish we had just a couple more episodes just to get to know a little bit more about Maggie's backstory and her... because when we meet her at the beginning of the show, she seems to already have done this cycle previous, like, amount of times. Like,
the people closest to her are aware of the signs that she's going through this.
Yes. They can see that she's, like, on the borderline of having a manic episode or is currently experiencing a manic episode, which could really only mean one thing that she's off her meds. So that's where we meet Maggie at the beginning of the show. And I will say, this episode is a little bit like opposite ends of the spectrum for me. So if Fallout is probably my least favorite show of the year until, I don't know, Stranger Things season 5 comes out or whatever the fucking season we're on. So until that comes out, it's probably...
I think they're just numbered in Stranger Things. It'll be Stranger Things 5. It's not season 5. She's fine.
Okay, whatever. Jesus Christ. So until that comes out, that's probably my least favorite series of the year. Conversely, Big Mood is probably my favorite series of 2024 so far, mainly because you said that it reminded you a lot of Broad City, mostly like the double girls or whatever, you know, hijinks in the city.
Yeah, similar dynamic. One friend is a little bit more... subdued and has to kind of be egged on to go do it, and the other one's like, let's do this crazy thing, it's gonna be fun. But in Broad City, you never really approach, like, if there's anything like clinically wrong with Alana's character. And so when it flips at the end of that first episode and then into the second episode, you're like, okay, yes, some of those vibes are there, but there's going to be a lot more deeper stuff in this.
So it's for that very reason that even though it's just starring one woman, it reminds me much more of Fleabag. And I think it's because it's partially a British comedy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that like tone and sense of humor comes across in the same way in Fleabag. But also the very realistic portrayal of dealing with like mental health and those kinds of struggles, but also making it comedy. And there can be light in that also. Yeah, I found it really, really compelling and hilarious.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really funny. It also, it's not similar to this at all, but in a similar vein, kind of the cringe comedy of like The Office is there as well. That like you're so again, there's a lot more explanation of what that character is going through and why some of these decisions are being made or why some of these actions are being taken. But it doesn't change the fact that when they're happening right in front of you, that you still feel sympathy for the character, but you're also like, oh no.
Please, no, Maggie.
Because that, and the reason I also thought of The Office too is because one of the most famous episodes of The Office, my favorite episode, I think it's the funniest one in the that series, is the dinner party series. And so the dinner party second half of the episode in this one, where they actually have like that, she tries to throw that impromptu dinner party to show that her therapist that she is living life and she doesn't need to go back on the lithium, and the cast of characters that's all there and everything. And then she gets that guy from Tinder that she just met who is, what is he trying to do, like PCP or ketamine or something right there? Yeah. And they eventually have to throw him out. She's going to take, we're going to Asia next month.
We're going to Asia.
That one was my...
We leave next week.
My favorite and most enjoyable are not the correct terms, but as far as like anxiety-inducing television storylines, that one was the one that got me the most. I'll let you go before I throw out a second one, because there was a second one that also was like, ooh.
I was going to say something on a totally different vein, so you can move forward.
Okay, I also thought the idea of like that lost time that she has, where she like misses a whole day and she wakes up and she's confused, and that is also on top of that, like the final straw with her friend, as she doesn't go along with her to her appointment to the abortion clinic. And That one I think is a lot scarier. So they also do a good job of escalating it, that it is easier to laugh at some of her symptoms manifesting and poor decisions at the beginning part of the season, and then as it keeps escalating while she's going through this manic depressive episode, and possibly more because she's seeing things as well.
Yeah.
That you start to go, okay, this is a really serious problem.
Yes, as her condition worsens, it gets less funny. Right, the fact that, I mean, in the very beginning of that last episode, you're like, oh my God, she's going to miss the appointment. She already missed the appointment. So I think they did a good job with, like, backtracking to show the story, like, in her real experience time versus the other characters experiencing time. So they did a very interesting and good job with that. But in the same vein, like, the mental illness aspect gets less funny, or it's played less for humor. And I think that's a really, like, really great way to depict what mental illness is like. It's not a cop-out for a lot of these people, right? So she's not, like, an inherently good person if she didn't have bipolar disorder, right? Mm-hmm. There are still very questionable things that she does.
I don't think it was her bipolar that had her call up a mentoring program and try to get a teenager to do her real life job as a playwright for her.
Right. That's just like the kind of person she is, which normally in the, you know, respect of like Alana, that would be played for humor. And it is here too. But the things that she does, despite having a mental illness, does have consequences in her real life.
And eventually it's too much for her mother, her best friend, her other friends.
Yeah. And it's also okay to acknowledge too that it's like a very tragic ending for Maggie, because she loses, well, we don't know what's going to happen yet, but right now she's at a crossroad with her best friend where it does not look like they can repair that relationship.
She's practically unemployed.
Yes, for reasons that are truly not her fault in that instance. But it's been enough of a trial on the friendship that the strain of the friendship can't really handle it anymore, which is unfortunately what happens to a lot of people who deal with mental illness or drug addiction or something. Like, having an addiction is, of course, like, not inherently your fault. But even if something isn't directly tied to being your fault, they still have consequences, or they still hold a lot of weight and fracture relationships like that, even really great friendships. Also, the fact that she's turning 30, she just turns 30 in the show. We're just right in that age range. I think we're currently experiencing things with friends where maybe that friendship served you very well when you were younger, but as you get older, those become strained, or, you know, you grow distance between each other. And that's not necessarily a bad thing too. So I'm really excited to see if they get renewed for a new season, how much of a time jump there is, if any, and have they come to a place where they can like function without each other? Like, is she back on her meds or is she not? Has she not been on her meds and she actually produces this really great play? Or does that not even have anything to do with her writing her play, you know?
How long is Eddie going to be in Los Angeles?
Right.
It seemed like a bit of an open-ended trip, especially because she just finally sold the bar, so she has extra money. And she sold the pinball machine for some extra money. But then she doesn't have a bar to go back to run.
Right. And the bar, and the brother does say, like, if you do come back, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much of Maggie's bad decision making is a side effect of not being, well, I guess a side effect of her bipolar disorder, like letting the rats out during the party? That the best friend, like, very kindly throws for her, but also doesn't really respect the fact that she can't be, like, she's in a depressive state right now, so she can't really be social in that way, and mm-hmm. then throws a party anyway. I think that was the biggest foul on the friend. So, like, neither of them are, like...
Which is one of those confusing ones, because it comes from a nice, sweet place, yes. but it's not the right thing right now for your friend who's struggling.
You're putting her in a toxic environment, in a bad situation for her mentally.
But the Love Actually party is pretty fucking funny.
It is so funny, and that she makes her be the brother with mental illness because she has mental illness. That is incredibly funny. And when she does let the rats out, like, that whole thing and, you know, the bar blowing up in her face, like, that is really great stuff. But also, Maggie is right in the respect that when Eddie reignites with her old flame, that man is not good for her. And in a way that, like, Maggie also emotionally manipulates Eddie to, like, go on these, like, crazy adventures or whatever.
Yeah.
Sidebar trips. Jonah is also doing that to Eddie, just in a different way. He's manipulating her with money and affection.
Yeah. I think that's good. And you're right. I would like to see a continuation of the story. As of right now, it's only been out since late March, so it has not been around all that long. But Big Mood has not been renewed for season 2. But again, it was on Channel 4 over in England, and then it comes over here right away on Tubi. Hey, if Tubi has any sniff of a hit, I think they're going to greenlight a season 2. So
I know.
I don't know if it's going to... like, even if it's not successful enough to get, like, the Channel 4 renewal... I wonder if Tubi would be interested, because I was looking into Tubi Originals, because I said to you, I was like, well, it could be. I mean, they do make Tubi Originals, not like these. I was looking at it. It's a bunch of low-rent horror films. This one, Borders, looks like it is another pullover from England over here. There's a few Spanish language movies and shows, so that's not going to work for me. But as far as, like, stars and stuff, there's nothing.
No.
It is a desolate wasteland they attached Tubi Original to.
They kept saying, like, Tubi Original. I'm like, it's not a Tubi Original. This is, you were trying to, like, well, is it, did they pay partially for it or whatever? I'm like, dude, no, I'm almost positive they are just hosting the show on Tubi. But... very, very smart. Whoever's working in their marketing department knows exactly what the fuck they're doing, because they made a really big push at the same time that Nicola Coughlin is making a really big push and doing all the junkets for Bridgerton. Bridgerton season 3, she is the lead. She's the lead in Bridgerton season 3, which is going to be a hit. And I would love to say, oh, I hate to bring up Bridgerton for the third time this podcast, but I fucking don't, because that show is good and I will die on that hill. And she's going to be fantastic in it.
Hey, if you're Tubi, I'm sure from your, like, long-term planning that you have to be thinking, all we need is our Orange is the New Black. And then people start going to our service and then they can start watching. Easier said than done, because, I mean, there's a lot of other streaming services with a lot of other higher quality TV shows that don't quite make it. Which reminds me, we have to finish Argylle tonight on Apple TV, which isn't a show, but...
but damn it.
Maybe that'll be the worst movie I've seen in a long time after I finish it.
I don't know. It kind of got me again, now that she is...
it's a lot better than How to Date Billy Walsh, I will say that.
That's fair. And maybe Tubi is waiting until season 3, part 1 of Bridgerton premieres.
Maybe.
When Netflix gets that bump in subscribers again. I think Tubi is going to see, okay, is this real star power? Can Nicola Coughlin, like, carry this show, basically?
Yeah. Speaking of gaining subscribers, please subscribe to our podcast wherever you get podcasts.
I will do anything you want.
And remember, we are doing that live podcast here in less than 2 weeks now. May 11th, 1:30 p.m., Grandview Theater in Draft House. We are watching The Fall Guy, and then we were doing a podcast after it. And we are giving away two tickets on this podcast right now. Well, we'll give them away next week, but you submit starting now at @_ChopsTV on Twitter. Please tell us what you think is the best Emily Blunt performance in a movie. If it matches with the one that's in my head, you're going to win a pair of tickets to it.
I can't even imagine what's the one that's in... Oh, I know what it is.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.